Whether you get it on your smartphone, TV, radio, or newspaper, there's no shortage of news. But some say America's newsrooms are shortchanging diverse journalists when it comes to recruiting and retention.
But I felt like me being sort of the only Black person, just I didn't really have support.
Today on the 21st, the fight to make the news you read, watch, or listen to reflect America's growing diversity. I'm Reginald Hardwick, in for Brian Mackey. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WGLT in Normal, WCBU in Peoria, and WNIJ in DeKalb. Our show starts after these headlines. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Reginald Hardwick of WILL and Illinois Public Media, sitting in for Brian Mackey. Coming up, the movement to remove Stephen Douglas from monuments and other tributes around Illinois. But first, like many other institutions in 2020, America's newsrooms are facing a reckoning for a lack of diversity. The news you read, watch, or listen to, whether it's here on public radio or your local newspaper or TV newscast, are likely affected. Soledad O'Brien is a veteran journalist of both CNN and NBC. Recently, she wrote an op-ed in the New York Times that journalists of color are having a Me Too movement. O'Brien said this during a recent interview with New York City station WPIX.
So when I called it a Me Too moment for journalists, I just think journalists are more comfortable. Part of that is because of social media, calling out the things that we see in our own industry: bias, unfairness, lack of opportunity, and also sometimes just point of view and framing of stories. Often, I think newsrooms like to think they're serving an audience that's 100% white, and we know that a number of cities are majority minority. So You have to think about serving your entire audience and speaking to an entire audience.
Joining us now to talk about diversity in newsrooms, we're joined by a few journalists. Hugo Balta is the president of the National Association of Hispanic Journalists. He is also owner of Latino News Network and news director of WTTW, PBS member station in Chicago. Hi, Hugo, and welcome to the 21st.
Thank you very much for having me.
Don Innes is managing editor of Outsports, freelance writer and professor at the University of Hartford. Don is also a part of the newly formed Trans Journalists Association, which seeks to support transgender journalists in their workplaces and careers. Hi, Don. Thank you for coming on today. And we also have Celeste Headley. She is a journalist and author of Do Nothing, How to Break Away from Overworking, Overdoing and Underliving. And you may hear her host the national show 1A from time to time. Hi, Celeste. Thank you for joining us on the 21st.
Hi there. Good to talk to you.
And I also have to say, in transparency, I've been a member of the National Association of Black Journalists since I was in high school, and at times a member of other journalists of color organizations as well. And listeners, we invite you to join the conversation by giving us a call at 800-222-9455. If you have questions or comments about the lack of diversity in newsrooms or are wondering how it affects you, give us a call, 800-222-9455. Do you feel your community or demographic is represented in the media? And why or why not? We want to hear from you. Call or tweet us at 21st Show. And one other journalist who has joined us, Nader Issa, education reporter at the Chicago Sun-Times and president of the Asian American Journalists Association Chicago chapter. Hi, Nader.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. According to the U.S. Census estimates for 2019, people of color comprised 39% of the U.S. population, yet the American Society of News Editors say only 22% of employees in newspapers are people of color. And the Radio Television Digital News Association says less than 15% of radio journalists are people of color, and only 26% of TV journalists are people of color. And those are record high percentages. Celeste Headley, what is your reaction to those numbers, and how does it affect what's being reported or decided to be reported?
I mean, first of all, I think the picture is even worse than that when you start looking at what jobs those journalists are in. Very often we find that when there are journalists of color in an organization, even though there's very few of them, they're in entry-level or close to entry-level positions. And you rarely see those journalists of color rise through the ranks and get promoted, which means leadership in many journalist organizations is almost entirely white and usually almost entirely male. What does that do to the kind of news that gets reported? Well, it means that a lot of incredibly important stories are considered not newsworthy because the white male person in charge of editorial judgment says that's not important to me, and therefore that's probably not important to our audience. The other thing is that you have to keep in mind that NPR's audience is overwhelmingly white, for example, in the public radio audience. I would say that's partly because the white audience is catered to. And what that means is that it skews news decisions because you're trying to make a news organization, you're trying to make news decisions according to who your audience is, right? So if your audience is not just white, but overwhelmingly elite white, people in top management positions and with high levels of education and high incomes, that's really going to make the sound, the news stories that you cover and the kind of people that you hire look very much the same.
Hugo Balta, your organization, the National Association of Hispanic Journalists. I hear a dog in a Zoom today.
that's our dog.
That's okay. The National Association of Hispanic Journalists, along with the National Association of Black Journalists, begin virtual conferences today. Hugo, when you bring concerns up like the lack of diversity to people or companies that run newsrooms, what is their response?
It is very frustrating. You know, the National Association of Hispanic Journalists is celebrating 35 plus years, and its mission has always been to champion the fair treatment of Hispanic Latinos in newsrooms and in news coverage. And statistically speaking, I can't tell you we've moved the needle very much in that regard. And part of that is because of the homogeneous leadership across news outlets, regardless of platform. You get a lot of nods, you know, you get a lot of invitations to have meetings, especially around conference time, like what we're hosting this year with the National Association of Black Journalists. But I'll tell you, it's gotten to the point where NAHJ, while we will continue to knock on doors and request, demand a seat at the table, thanks to advancements in technology, we're building our own table. And last year, NAHJ launched Palabra, which is the first time a journalism organization creates its own platform, in part because of the necessity for it. You know, so Palabra leverages the experience and talent of our members in producing content by Latinos for Latinos in a way that's much more sophisticated than what we see in mainstream media and in particularly in English. So when topics like immigration reform, the general election, COVID-19, the civic unrest in the aftermath of George Floyd, when we do penetrate the conversations in mainstream media, it's always very one-dimensional. It's very much scratching the surface and often patronizing because at different levels, both in front of and behind a literal and figurative camera, there aren't enough Hispanic Latinos. And so now we are providing the public and news outlets content that really deep dives on perennial issues that matter most, not only to Hispanic Latinos, but to everyone in our country.
And Hugo, I want to follow up. This morning, your organization, the NAHJ, issued a press release asking newsrooms to stop labeling people of color as minorities. Can you tell us why real quickly?
Sure. Look, COVID-19 and the Black Lives Matter movement is shedding light to the longstanding reality of systemic inequality for people of color across all industries and, of course, in news media. And what we are pushing for is the elimination of a word that is no longer relevant. When you talk about Hispanic Latinos, when you talk about people of color, and really the way that word has been used, it's really to describe people that are not white, no longer valid. You know, if I only focus on the Hispanic Latino community as an example, that community demographically is the emerging majority in many markets across the United States, as the U.S. Census continues to show. But in many markets, like say the Bronx, New York, Southern California, anywhere in Texas and California, the Hispanic Latino community is the majority. And so this word that was invented by the government, by the establishment, the white establishment, is no longer accurate. And for journalists to continue to use it, it perpetuates not only inaccuracy of the meaning of the word, but how it's been used historically in order to control a community that is an integral part of the history, the past, the present, and the future of this country, both economically, politically, and culturally.
Nader Issa, you're president of the Asian American Journalists Association in Chicago. You say some Asian communities are almost ignored in coverage.
Yeah, there are big immigrant communities in Chicago that are from predominantly Asian countries. And we don't often see that as a big focus of news coverage. When we're talking about immigration and how this country treats immigrants, a big piece of that is immigrants from Asian countries. And to fix some of that, I mean, everything that everyone on this segment has talked about, we need representation. You need reporters who come from these communities, who understand the needs of these communities to be able to report what their lives look like. And we had a great example just last week. A Chicago Tribune reporter who is Asian American had a great story where she went to every single restaurant in Chicago's Chinatown, talking about how they're still facing business struggles and worries because of the coronavirus. Because when the pandemic first started, there were a lot of people who just didn't want to go to an Asian restaurant, because they thought that was going to somehow get them sick with COVID. And they're still facing some of the troubles from that. And to be able to think of that angle, or to think of even doing that story, you need to really understand communities. And that applies to all communities, Black communities, Latino communities. No matter who you're reporting about, you need to understand the community. And representation is a big way to get there. I've also always been a big proponent of representation in management, because we've started to see in recent years at least a little bit of representation in the reporter ranks, but then it's just a struggle to get your story ideas approved, because you have editors, you have producers who don't necessarily see the value in what you're talking about, and they don't think that's something that's worth covering. And so representation across the board, but especially in management, is important to really be able to focus on these issues.
Don Innes, you are part of the Trans Journalists Association. One, is there any statistics measuring how many LGBTQ people are working in mainstream newsrooms, and how is visibility missing in America's newsrooms?
I don't have any hard numbers for you, but prior to my online news career, which I've been doing now for about 6 years, I'm almost seven, career I had was in television news, mostly local and also network news. And when you looked around the newsroom, you saw white men. You saw white straight men. There were some gay men, there were some Black women, there were some women, there were even Asians and other people of other backgrounds, but they all basically were subservient to the white men who were straight and were cisgender. That's a word that means not transgender. If you don't have people in the newsrooms, as many of the other panelists have said, making decisions, bringing stories, we don't have representation other than to other us, to report on marginalized communities. Let's not say minority, let's say marginalized in terms of the LGBT, in terms of trans women of color, because their stories are told by other people. And when integration does happen and inclusion does happen, it's sort of like how it was when the first women started working in local news. They're given only the stories that the white, straight, cis men think that they can cover. And I would love to see the cis white people take a step away from the table and open a chair up for people like me to have more people representing LGBT. I can't give you numbers, but I can tell you this. Of the LGBT community, the overwhelming percentage is white gay men. And that number holds true in journalism as well, whether it's online media or it's the broadcast media. And it just makes me sad because the reason we had to start a Trans Journalists Association was because we didn't feel like the NLGJA, the Association for LGBTQ Journalists, of which I'm a lifetime member, was giving us enough representation. We're not even in the name NLGJA. So that's why we have a Trans Journalists Association. And we have a style guide available for newsrooms. And I'm very eager to work with Hugo on his new handbook that they just put out, which is wonderful. And I hope that any other organization that wants to be more representative will come work with us.
Right. We are talking about diversity in newsrooms, or the lack of diversity in newsrooms. And of course, we invite anyone to call us at 800-222-9455. When we return, we're going to talk about solutions. And we're also going to talk about being what it's like to be in a newsroom, a mostly mainstream newsroom where you are, you know, there are a few of others of you. If you are a minority, I know we're trying to get away from that term, but you're the only person of color, the only person of who is LGBTQ. So keep stay with us. I'm Reginald Hardwick, and you're listening to The 21st. Welcome back to The 21st. I'm Reginald Hardwick, and for Brian Mackey, we are talking today about the lack of diversity in America's newsrooms. Several journalists have taken to social media this summer to talk about microaggressions and outright aggressions when working in newsrooms filled with mostly white, mostly straight TV, radio, or newspapers newsrooms. And Lee Hill is an executive producer at WNYC Public Radio in New York City. But in 2011, only 9 years ago, he became the first Black reporter at Colorado Public Radio in Denver. Recently, he talked about a few of his experiences on the national talk show, The Takeaway.
I remember going to a Juneteenth celebration in the city of Denver to try and sort of get news sources. And I invited everyone from the newsroom at the time to come and sort of join me at this event and just so that the station could have a presence, and no one wanted to come.
He also talked about a colleague asking him to take him out for a beer to explain the whole Black experience. Well, in response, Stuart Vanderwild, president of CEO and CEO of Colorado Public Radio, released a statement that reads in part, "As leadership, we acknowledge inadequate progress. We must do better. Our newsroom is developing a role to elevate our focus on race and social justice while baking in this focus for all news staff. We are surveying the sources and voices heard in our stories and will publish the results. These are just a few steps that must also include how we recruit and support our talent in every department, how we approach our content and outreach, and how we understand and remove unconscious bias from our organization." Celeste, coming back to you, recently you've been talking a lot this summer with public radio journalists from around the country. What are the frustrations that journalists of color and LGBTQ journalists are telling you about the atmosphere in newsrooms?
They're kind of legion. I have started a group to maybe find some solutions. And so let me start with the very first frustration, which is the endless listening sessions. Management is always ready to gather everybody for an all staff meeting and listen to people's concerns. But in truth, they're not actually listening. Listening would require that they actually hear what people are saying and then take some kind of action. We've been having listening sessions for a very long time, and they do not bring any substantive change. Another problem is that a large number of journalists of color especially come into organizations as on a fellowship, right, which is term limited. That means as soon as the fellowship's over, they're out the door. Those fellowships temporarily and in a way fraudulently increase a station's or network's diversity numbers, when in fact they're not giving any job security to the journalist in question here. There are many, many other issues as well. There are issues about when a journalist will bring up a story that comes from a community of color or a non-white, non-cisgendered community and be told that that's not newsworthy, and the fact that they're interested in it shows their bias. This issue of objectivity is a huge discussion right now, because objectivity, what is, first of all, objectivity doesn't exist. Every single decision you make in life is subject to your own emotions and your own experience. But the idea of objectivity in journalism, at least, is almost entirely based on what the largely white and male leaders of a journalist organization think is right. If they think it's neutral, then it'll be objective. Anything that veers from what they believe is neutral then becomes subjective. And that takes an emotional toll eventually if you're a journalist that cares about what you're doing. And this is why we're seeing the just hemorrhaging of talented journalists of color from news organizations all over the place. The turnover is high because the job is simply not sustainable.
Hugo Balta, as NHJ president, what do your members tell you about experiences with microaggressions or downright aggressions in newsrooms?
You know, often, I think, and it's not exclusive to Hispanic Latinos, I've certainly experienced it throughout my career, but it's the same when I speak to other members of marginalized communities, whether it's race or sexual orientation or other. Often we are either the only person in the room representing our community, and we are the only person in the room representing a person of color or marginalized community. And that then is a lot of pressure, especially for young people, because then you become the pseudo representative of that community, which is very unfair. It speaks to the lack, the ignorance, the unconscious bias that exists in newsrooms, but also the willful ignorance, because the numbers have been there all the time. You know, we're in a census year, and every 10 years, it's like people lose their mind. Oh my goodness, the country's changing. Look at the demographics. Look at the number of Hispanic, Latino growth. We're walking towards being a majority of people of color. And then what happens for the next 3 to 5 years is just everybody gravitates to anything that has a Hispanic Latino label or a Black label or so on and so forth, instead of really. And the problem is the way they're approaching the situation. They look at diversity, equity, and inclusion as a problem to be solved. And when we as human beings are faced with a problem to be solved, we're rushing to fix it. We want to put out that fire. And that's when mistakes are made. What we need to do is reframe DE&I as an opportunity to be realized. And when we are, as humans are faced with an opportunity, we want to step back. We want to look at it from different angles. And we want to invite others to work together towards realizing those opportunities. And one of the things, not only at NHJ, but also at WTTW, you know, this isn't a time to disinvest. And we've all seen, unfortunately, the contraction of budgets, a lot, of course, due to COVID-19. But we've seen the disinvestment in newsrooms before COVID-19. And often what happens is things like DE&I are seen as a nice to have, and not a need to have. And that's why it was so important for WTTW News to invest in this time, to really double down on DE&I and announce the expansion of Chicago Tonight to weekends, beginning with Latino voices and Black voices, because we have been part of the conversation during COVID-19 and in the aftermath of the death of George Floyd, but we also need to give our platform for other voices to be raised, to shed light to these inequalities in order to build bridges between communities that are often separated by not only race, but also socioeconomic background, access to health, access to education. In order to resolve those issues, we as a media company need to open up our doors and welcome the public in order to have these conversations.
And for those of you here in the downstate, WTTW is in the Chicago area. Nader, you're the president of the local Asian American Journalists Association. Do you have stories that you've heard of aggressions towards Asian Americans in the newsroom?
I do, yeah. And it's the same type of issues that all of us are talking about, right? Where oftentimes there are very few people of color, very few people who are transgender or gay or lesbian in a newsroom, in a room making decisions, and they just don't have their voices heard. And I mean, when we're talking about microaggressions, it's as simple as I think when there's a story like in Chicago, for example, there's a story of an 18-year-old woman who was punched in the face by a Chicago police officer during a Columbus statue protest, and telling editors that we need to focus on her story and trust her a little bit more and stop questioning her motives, and being dismissed. That's a microaggression. That's saying what you believe to be the real story here is not valid, and we're going to do it our way. I think in terms of AAJA, I will say, I think I see a big part of our role is being allies to Black and Latino journalists, allies to LGBTQ journalists. I don't see how we can advocate for more Asian American representation without also doing those other things, because I think this is all one piece of the puzzle. And any microaggressions that Asian Americans face, I think Black and Latino journalists face an equal or greater extent. And so when we're talking about all of this, it's all one fight. It's not that each of our distinct groups are fighting for different things. This is all one fight that we're in together.
Don Innes of Outsports, are newsrooms safe places for people who are in the LGBTQ community?
I would say that safe is not the right word. I need to basically remind everybody that when it comes to LGBTQ, we're very intersectional. We have Black, Latina, Latino, and embarrassingly white people like me in our population. But it's often that the safety is more about someone making an off-color joke or a joke that they think that, you know, no one's going to be offended because, well, everybody makes fun of gays or Blacks or Jews when they're all not in that group. And I'm shocked to this day at how many people in newsrooms don't get that someone may not be outwardly Jewish, Black, gay, transgender, but those kind of jokes just don't have a place in our newsrooms. So that's the danger, I think, is that people forget that, you know, we're all part of an intersectional community. And even if I'm not Black or gay or Jewish or anything else, I may have someone I'm related to who is, and you may be offending me. And I think verbal aggression, even if you want to call them microaggressions, they are a form of violence. And the biggest danger for transgender people is just not being respected. People often will mix up what a trans woman is or a trans man is because they don't take the time to figure it out, or they don't respect someone's pronouns.
Celeste, let me ask you about the role of leadership, specifically the lack of diversity in leadership. I know there's been a lot of strife at WNYC in New York City. For those of you who are in Illinois, that's the lead public radio station in New York City, over a change of leadership. The news staff had asked for a minority news director, and instead a white woman who didn't have any experience in public radio was appointed to that position, and that's caused a lot of talking and a lot of discussion there. But, you know, what is the role of leadership in all this, and how are you making them accountable?
Yeah, and I want to clarify, they asked for a non-white person who had experience in public radio and knew New York very well. What they got was a white person who had no experience in public radio and had never lived in New York City. So this is an example of a case in which a station held listening sessions and didn't actually listen, right? When it comes to leadership, I was talking earlier about the fact that journalists of color and non-cisgendered people can make it to the entry levels or maybe a step or so above, but they're never promoted. And this becomes part of the problem all the way through. When you're trying to increase your diversity numbers, and I kind of hate referring to anyone who's not white as diverse, right? That still centers whiteness. That still means here's white, it's the standard, and then everybody else is diverse. But that said, when you're trying to increase those numbers by simply bringing in assistant producers or rookie reporters, and then they leave because it's unsustainable emotionally or physically, you never crack that ceiling into leadership, which means you are even less likely to promote people of color or people of other sexual identities. You are less likely to put them into leadership. They're less likely to earn more money. It just becomes the cycle, which is where we ended up here. We got to keep in mind that public radio as an industry, and NPR in particular, have been working on increasing diversity among the ranks for 20 years at least, and we haven't. I mean, the improvements have been incremental at best. So why we keep doing the exact same things over and over and over again, rather than simply deciding that we're going to try something entirely new, try something radical, like making sure that the staff and leadership at a station or network reflects the community that they serve. That may sound radical, but that seems pretty reasonable to me. So when it comes to leadership, the decisions that you're making, not just in hiring, but promoting, who gets training, who gets development, who gets the stories that are going to lead to awards, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Every one of those decisions every single day are being made largely by white males. And no offense to white males, but human beings are most likely to feel drawn to and feel close to people who are similar to themselves. That's the basis of this. That's why we have to diversify leadership.
Listeners, we invite you to join the conversation by giving us a call at 800-222-9455. Perhaps you have a question about a lack of diversity in newsrooms or wondering how it affects you. Again, give us a call at 800-222-9455, or you can tweet us at the 21st show. And when we return, we're going to talk about solutions and how you can hold the newsroom that you depend on for news accountable for inclusive journalism. And real quickly, though, I want to talk about tomorrow's show. The first COVID-19 patient in the U.S. to receive a double lung transplant was discharged from an Illinois hospital recently. And tomorrow on the 21st, we will talk with her. So definitely stay tuned for that conversation. When we return again, we're going to continue our conversation about the lack of diversity in the newsrooms of America. We're talking with members of the National Association of Hispanic Journalists, National Association, the Asian American Journalists Association, the Trans Journalists Association, and our friend Celeste Headley, who you probably have heard on 1A and some other national public radio talk shows. So keep it here. I'm Reginald Hardwick, and you're listening to The 21st. Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Reginald Hardwick, and for Brian Mackey, we are talking about the lack of diversity in America's newsrooms today. Esmeralda Bermudez is a reporter with the Los Angeles Times. She is one of 80 staffers who signed the open letter to newspaper management seeking a truer reflection of LA's demographic makeup. And here's what she told public radio station KCRW about why better diversity makes a better paper.
Covering Latino stories and having a staff that's representative of our region, it's not only a moral issue, it's also about accurate journalism, and it's also about, frankly, financial sense.
And our guests today are fighting for better representation of all communities in America's newsrooms. We are talking with journalist and author Celeste Headley, National Association of Hispanic Journalists President Hugo Balta, Don Innes of Outsports and a member of the Trans Journalists Association, and Nader Issa, reporter at the Chicago Sun-Times and president of the Asian American Journalists Association Chicago chapter. And again, our lines are open. The number to call is 800-222-9455. If you want to share your thoughts or ask a question of our panel, and again, the number is 800-222-9455. You can also tweet us at 21st Show. Hugo, this discussion and appealing to publishers and owners of broadcast entities that diversity in newsrooms is a better business and can help reach a wider audience is not new. How long have you been telling companies that, and are they listening? Are they getting the message?
For as long as I could remember, and certainly with my volunteer work with the National Association of Hispanic Journalists, I think, you know, and again, as I mentioned earlier, it's a frustrating occupation because we get a lot of smiles and a lot of nodding heads and a lot of invitations to have meetings at very impressive skyscrapers and corner offices, but really it's an exploitation of journalism organizations like NHJ and others that represent marginalized communities, because it's really a check in the box exercise, and more often than not we're being used. And to say yes, we met with the board of directors or the leadership of the NHJ, we were there at the national conference, and I'm not saying that is not appreciated and it isn't productive. But at the end of the day, the proof is in the pudding, and words need to turn into action. And what we're asking and continuously asking is for transparency of the demographics, of the makeup of those newsrooms, and then to work together towards making an improvement. The fact of the matter is, newsroom managers don't share their demographics because they know they don't have a positive story to say. And so that then continues this perpetual circle of, you know, continuing to have the same conversations over and over again and the same nodding heads and smiles. And I think that's created an opportunity. Again, I mentioned Palabra, an independent platform created by NHJ, but also independent journalists. You know, I took over the Latino News Network, which is a independent journalism outlet serving Hispanic Latinos in New England, from Diane Alberio, a former president of NHJ and a pioneer in this space. And that's because these contracting budgets, the short-sightedness by the homogeneous news managers, have created news deserts in not just small markets, but markets like New York, markets like Chicago, markets like Boston, and independent journalists are now filling those gaps because the mainstream media can no longer serve local communities in the way that they need and deserve. And I'm not just talking about marginalized communities, but if we use the example of COVID-19, it was imperative for us at WTTW to devote our resources to tell that story from different neighborhoods, on the north side, on the west side, on the south side, because we knew, even before the statistics were out, that even though across the Chicago, across the state of Illinois, across the country, we all have a shared experience about COVID-19, how marginalized communities, beginning with the Black community, the Hispanic Latino community, how they're experiencing COVID-19 is very different because of the disparities to healthcare, to wealth, to education. And so we needed not to produce an overarching coverage of COVID-19 from our headquarters on the Northwest side. We needed to go to communities on the South side and listen to business owners, to community leaders, to real people on the South side, North side, and West side in order to really appropriately tell this story from the principles, the foundation, the principles of journalism in being fair and accurate.
Nader, you're a reporter with the Sun-Times and also a member of AAJA. What solutions are you seeking to increase representation and diversity?
Well, I think it does start with transparency and first realizing what the problem is. At the Sun-Times, I'm also the chair of our guild, our union at the Sun-Times. And one of the issues we pushed for in negotiations in the spring was a diversity tracker, a newsroom demographics tracker that would be put online, and we got that. And so now on our website, it shows exactly where the problems are. There's more men and more white men specifically than any other group in our newsroom. And so once we move there and we see what the problem is, we need to figure out ways to, if management needs to be pushed, we need to figure out which ways to push them to hire more. And so something we came up with was this sort of joint committee with our management team, where quarterly, four times a year, we meet and we identify reporters of color, reporters who are LGBTQ, and we give names to management and tell them these would be great candidates for employment at the Sun-Times. And then management reaches out to those people, and that's just a way to build their network, right? Because a lot of times, even if there are managers that are kind-hearted and they mean well, but they're not hiring anyone other than white men, a way to push them is to open their network, because they are usually making quick hires and just hiring people that they know. And growing up in a news industry that for decades has only had white men in it, the people that they're going to know are white men. And so broadening mm-hmm. that network for them and pushing them to meet different candidates than they otherwise would have, that's one solution that we've looked at. Obviously, involvement with all of our different great groups, NAHJ, AAJA, NABJ, just broadening those networks and knowing who's out there is usually a big help.
And has those systems developed there to sometimes helped with hiring?
It's so fresh that I'm not sure quite yet. I will say that I don't think there's going to be one thing that's going to help. It's anytime we're talking about dismantling systems, it's going to take probably years, to be honest. And we've seen already that very little has changed. I mean, this issue of diversity in newsrooms isn't new, right? People have been talking about it for years. But we're in the year 2020 and not much has changed. In fact, some newsrooms are getting worse. They're even at NBC Sports Chicago yesterday, a black man and a woman of color were two layoffs that were announced. And so it's going to take time. I don't have an answer for you. I don't know if there's going to be a magic solution. Well, we know there's not, but it's just going to take a lot of different efforts. And to be honest, I think we also have gotten to a point where such little progress has been made, where people recognize that they're not being welcomed into these spaces that have been so opposed to change, that especially in Chicago, Hugo mentioned this, there's been a lot of independent journalists that have popped up and independent newsrooms that have popped up, like The Tribe, Injustice Watch, Southside Weekly. There are these newsrooms where reporters are able to get their perspectives in and feel welcome because the legacy newsrooms just seem like they're not willing to change.
Got about 5 minutes left in our conversation. Celeste, you tweeted this on August 1st. Please, please, please support your public radio station. The staff is not making much, but they depend on you for their salaries. But also, please find out if the station management is ethical and supportive or toxic. Please demand resignations, demand reform, demand better. You talked about let's stop having just the listening sessions. What are folks telling you? What they want to go further? They want to push the reform further. What does that look like?
You mean among the listeners?
Among the journalists of color, you know.
So there's a number of things that have to happen. I mean, number one, we have to bring some kind of salary transparency to our industry. While we're able to hide the conversations that led to hiring decisions, and there's no accountability for hiring decisions, no change will happen. In other words, if you have a leader of an organization that continually hires people who look and have similar experiences to themselves, and there's zero accountability for that, then there's also no impetus to change. The same with salary transparency. We need to know what everybody's making so that people are aware if there are gaps in pay. Also, if you really want to know whether a workplace is toxic or not, one of the best places to look is in turnover. Not only what are their demographic numbers, if you can get those, but also how often are journalists of color especially, or journalists of other sexual identities, etc., of other backgrounds, leaving that organization? How long do they generally last? The other thing is that your favorite reporters, follow them on social media. Very often you will start to get hints, at least, of the real story of what's going on. Not always, but you can. The main thing is that if you are a news consumer, you should also be a partner in that news organization. Be someone who subscribes if it's a paper, be someone who contributes if it's a local public radio station, but also interrogate the leadership of your news organizations. They should not be able to hide behind closed doors.
You understand, because, you know, you've been in public radio for a long time. Some audiences simply, you know, have no idea. You know, they may be supporting, and you offered some solutions there. What other things are people telling you they would like to see to get newsrooms to be more inclusive?
There's a few things that need to happen. So we talked about salary transparency. We also have to have, like I said, accountability for hiring. In other words, if you say in your value statement that you value diversity and inclusion, then you better be accountable for those numbers. That means not having a news organization that has a diverse group of people, staff and journalists, is a failure of leadership. And you shouldn't be able to retain a position for 30 years or more if you continually fail at something that is supposed to be a core value of your organization. Another thing that needs to happen is that we have to get rid of things like these short-term contract workers, temp working. At this point, at least in public radio, it's often only the managers who have any kind of job security. And when people are afraid for their jobs all the time, that means people are afraid to speak up when there are abuses. And when there are, well, I mean, we call them microaggressions, but really they're just aggressions. When those things are happening and you don't have any kind of job security, you are way less likely to report them, way less likely to criticize the leadership of the organization that you work for.
And that's hardly just a Celeste problem or an NPR problem.
Right.
All across the LGBT media, we're all so-called contractors and freelancers. And without health insurance, I work 4 part-time jobs in addition to managing a website just to be able to feed my 3 kids. And I'm not alone. I know a lot of LGBT journalists who have absolutely no choice but to basically chase paychecks instead of chasing scoops.
Yeah.
I was going to ask Don, you know, and real quickly, we're running out of time, but if you had 30 seconds to offer any solutions to propose to make newsrooms more inclusive of LGBTQ people.
Inclusion costs money. Every media outlet across the country right now is looking at the COVID-19 advertising dollars and freaking out. There have been massive layoffs throughout the industry, but investing in people is always a positive. And what newsrooms have to do is spend the money, go to these conferences, reach out to our groups, and ask to find people so that we can have a seat at the table.
Well, I want to thank all of our guests today for this important conversation about diversity in the newsroom. Hugo Balta, president of the National Association of Hispanic Journalists and news director at WTTW. Don Innes, managing editor of Outsports. Celeste Headley, journalist and author of Do Nothing, How to Break Away from Overworking, Overdoing, and Underliving. And Nader Issa, reporter with the Chicago Sun-Times and president of the Chicago chapter of the Asian American Journalists Association. Thank you all for listening today. I'm Reginald Hardwick, and we'll talk with you tomorrow.